everybody. Nick Sonicola here. Episode 7, Forged by Fire. We got DJ Thieling here, and we got an awesome story that we're going to tell. First of all, let me remind you what the context is of Forged by Fire. This is about the stories of when it's not going well. Everybody has their success story. They're all over on every podcast you can find. But we like to dive into the fire and what really turns us into the successful people we become coming out of that. And we got a great one for you today. Really briefly, from Michigan originally, entrepreneurship background, starting at 18, but prior to that, just a middle class kid from Grand Rapids. You know, all four of my grandparents worked at the same factory, found entrepreneurship, fell in love on that journey, did a couple billion in sales, sold a company, bought it back, publicly traded, then private, sold it a second time. Every success and failure, every fire that you can think of, every peak and valley. So that's why I love to do podcasts like this with other individuals from other industries, just to compare notes. So that's my quick story. DJ, tell everyone just kind of your quick 2-minute version of your story before we dive into your story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Grew up in Portland, Oregon. Single mom, no dad in the mix, as you know. Had ADD, hated school, had some abuse. So it's like, you know, and I always share with people like, hey, we've all been through some messed up stuff. And I think that, I've learned over time that people really connect through your mess, not your success. So I love that this show. So fast forward, man, I got drafted at 19 with the San Francisco Giants 6th pick in 91. Blazed through the minor league system pretty quick. Was one of our top prospects. Had a son unplanned in the mid-90s. And that ended up changing the trajectory of my life, which we'll get into.
Yep.
And then since then, you know, I raised him. He's 26 now. It's a sneaker business. And I got into real estate in 05. I've done a few hundred million in sales, built a company, have my own investment.
Casual, like a few hundred million sales casually.
Yeah. And so.
I have a new tech business
we're working on, an app and everything. So yeah, just forging ahead, man.
Hating Southern Florida.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is actually a really interesting story because it's, we're only 7 episodes deep, but it's unlike any of the other ones because when we really start talking about your story, the distinction of the transition of your life, of that valley and that fire, is not about a failure of business or a failure of whatever. It's about a personal decision, right? So first let's take you to a part of the story that, people that are athletes, I played college baseball, so like to meet a number, a first round, number 6, you say number 9?
A 6 pick, yeah.
A 6 pick, or this is like, that's insane to me. Somebody that played, in the minors, almost at the pinnacle after 5 years, in the minors and just kicking ass and climbing through. I understand a little bit of how difficult that is. You are top 1/110 of 1% of all people that ever play baseball.
Damn, you make me feel good now. I didn't know that before you told me that earlier. I'm like, damn, I can do anything.
You are the top 1/10 of 1% of all people that ever picked up a bat and ball to where you made it. Tell me about your passion for baseball. I'm assuming that really helped you throughout your childhood. Tell me about that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, having ADD, ADHD, whatever, and not knowing back then in the 70s, right? It wasn't like diagnosed really. So I just knew that I didn't really have attention span in school. But in sports, like all I wanted to do was get outside and play. I wanted to play hoop. I wanted to go shoot some baskets. I wanted to hit and play baseball. And I think that, I first fell in love with baseball as soon as I started playing it. My brother's 2 years older. He and I are really close, Derek. I fell in love with it. And looking back, in the 3rd grade, we were asked, this piece of paper, Miss Harris class, 3rd grade. We wrote, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I literally have this frame. I wrote on here, I found it when my mom passed away in 2010 in her collection. I was like, holy crap. So I wrote in this thing that I want to be a professional baseball player. I said, you know, I'm in the minor leagues and the best player in the minors. No lack of confidence, right?
Yeah.
And so, and when I grew up, I want to be a professional baseball player. My favorite team is the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I named a couple players. And the crazy part is that I wrote that in the third grade, thought of it once, wrote it down, whatever, threw it in my mom's drawer. When she passed 2010, pulled that back, looked at it, and I got chills, man, because I was fortunate to play professional baseball, and I do a ton of business out of the Pittsburgh region. So it didn't align exactly, but
thoughts are things.
Yeah, but that was to me an awakening on how, you know, how that stuff works. You know?
How did baseball kind of shape you, and how did it keep you maybe out of some of the trouble that you could have been used to?
Oh, man.
Said that,
I mean, yeah, man. I mean, I had a lot of friends that, you know, looking at me, right? People would go, like, you grew up in kind of the ghetto a little bit. But, yeah, man, it was rough. You know, gang violence was real. At my neighborhood high school that I was going to go to was a school called Jefferson High School. And at that time in the 80s, man, it was rampant. I mean, people getting shot, you know, constantly. The gang violence was really bad. So my mom said, nope, you're going to Benson. I don't know how the hell I got into Benson, because you're supposed to have great grades, and I didn't. But my brother went there and he did. So they were probably like, okay, well, maybe we can overlook this on DJ, right? And so little did they know, right? But yeah, so that, I mean, just from an early age, you know, going out, like, sports was always... as much basketball as baseball, actually, but sports was always like allowing me to go do something fun with my friends that I think, you know, well, I did, you know, get in some trouble, but it kept me out of the heavy trouble.
Yeah.
Just because we were all athletes and, you know, we all wanted to just go rent some hoop or go play some baseball or something. So
who was more influential? You know, I grew up with a father, I grew up with both grandfathers. You're a dad, I'm a dad. Who's more influential, do you think, for your growth as a teenager, the certain coaches or the team environment of the other players? I know it's different, but when you look back, it's like, you know, there's certain things that influence you to go on a path and is, you know, to stay focused and to keep climbing as an athlete. Was it more of this coach or this group of coaches or the team itself?
Man, you know, my grandfather took me in, and it was kind of my dad, right? My dad wasn't around. So he took me in, and he was my coach, and he was, you know, my grandparents are like second parents.
Okay.
And so that was important, but also it was really about like the friends. Like, I just wanted to be with my boys, right? And to this day, a lot of them, you know, a couple of them, you know, I don't communicate with much, but, you know, a handful of them, I mean, we're still really close and still talk. So I think for me, it was like just, I don't know, looking back, just being part of something with your friends that you can go out and do that was fun. I think that was it, man.
Yeah.
We just wanted to go have fun. And, I didn't think about hitting home runs and, you know, what's my average and how many RBIs do I got, right, at 10 years old?
Yeah.
You just think like, it's like, shoot, man, I just
not like, not like 10-year-olds do now.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to go out and just have some fun with my buddies. So, yeah.
How old were you when you got drafted?
So I went to Mount Hood Community College in Oregon.
Okay.
Had a decent freshman year. And then my sophomore year, so after my freshman year, I signed with an NAIA powerhouse called Lewis Clark State over in Idaho. They won the World Series like the last 8 out of 10 years. I mean, they were crushing like D1 schools like Washington State. And anyways, and at the time, so I signed there after my freshman year, I got a scholarship. And then my sophomore year, I just exploded.
Yeah.
And had just a monster season. All the stars aligned, everything went like, just went incredible. And then ended up being the Giants' sixth pick in 91. And that was the start, man. Yeah.
So you would have been 19 when you
I was 19. Yeah.
So
19. In fact, my real quick, for any baseball fans listening, so when I signed, so right now there's different levels in the minor leagues, right? They have rookie ball. So they have rookie ball for the young teenage guys. They have a short season single A, which you're drafted and you go to that typically if you're a D1 kind of high pick. And then they have high A, or single A, high A. So you have rookie ball, short season A, single A, high A, double A, triple A, big leagues.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I played college baseball. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I thought there's three levels. Double A, triple A.
So when I signed, if you were a teenager, you were supposed to have to go play in rookie ball. That's where all the young rookie ball guys. My scout was like, no, man, he was, you know, junior college player of the year. Dude, he's going to Everett. He's going to short season A. So I'll never forget, man. Looking back, it's crazy. So that year in our league with 16 teams, there was four teenagers. There was me. There was a guy named Todd Hollinsworth who ended up being rookie of the year for the Dodgers.
Yep.
There was a guy named Sean Estes,
yep,
who pitched for a decade in the big leagues. And another guy named Mike Hampton who pitched for a decade in the big leagues.
Yep.
So I look back and go, God damn, man, I was in some good company.
You were very good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm glad you tell this story because especially for the guys that understand baseball, that it's going to create a lot of context for what we're going to talk about here in a second. So things are cruising, right? So
yeah,
you're one of only four. You're 19 years old. What's the high like when you've written about how you're going to play pro baseball one day as a third grader? My daughter's in third grade, so that means something to me. And now here you are, 19, you get drafted, you're going to A. What does it feel like? Like, what's going through your head? What's the excitement? What's the joy? What's the fears?
Oh, man. I was just excited, man. I remember our first game we played, the Mariners minor league, my first pro, you know, minor league game, pro game. We played the Mariners. That was where Mike Hampton was, Sean Estes. They had two first round picks that year. They took Hampton and Estes, right? I'm like,
good choices.
Man, they did it. Yeah, whoever that was, man, they got to hire, the Blazers got to hire that guy. But basically, that was my first game. And I remember looking and I was hitting third that game, right? And the third is like the best hitter. And here I am, you know, by far the youngest guy on the team. And back then, you didn't really see a lot of teenage guys out of high school or junior college in A or short season A. It was really uncommon. In fact, I signed in 91 and 1990 was the first kind of like $1 million guys, Todd Van Poppel for the A's. He was the first $1 million signing bonus out of high school.
He was a reliever.
He was a starter, but ended up, I think, being a reliever. It wasn't really as common back then. So here I was, youngest guy by far on the team, one of the youngest guys in the league. And but I didn't really think about it that way. I just was like, damn, I'm hitting third, man. This is kind of cool, you know. Let me see what I can do today, you know. And I just remember, man, before the first game, just being out there. I got a picture actually, and I just remember I had my one batting glove. I don't know why I only wore one batting glove, right? Like whatever that was.
Michael Jackson.
It was a college, thing, right? And white, like what, dude? So yeah, but that was it, man. And that was kind of the beginning, and was just really green. Didn't know what I was in for. I was just excited to be out there.
Was the day you got drafted the most excited you have ever been in sports? Was there a certain moment that you know won a game or won a championship or when hit a home run off someone? What was like the high or the peak of feeling for you?
I think overall my probably number one baseball experience. There's many, but my number one was I was in the minor leagues, they would bring guys up like prospects, right? Back then, you got to go and play in major league games.
Yeah.
So my first big league game I'm playing in, I think it was 92. It had to be 92.
So you're 20.
20, right? Didn't even have a name on
you
the
and A-Rod.
Yeah, didn't even have a name on your jersey, right? So here I'm in spring training, and it's the first spring training game. And they called me and a couple guys up. They're like, hey, you're going to go up and play in a split squad game and a big league game. I was like, damn, right? So, you know, Will Clark's playing first, Matt Williams at third. So the fifth inning, Matt Williams gets hurt. And Bob Lilly, I'll never forget, he's like, DJ, you're like, I wasn't even supposed to play, right? And I was like, dude, I was so nervous, man. I was like, I mean, people talk about, no, I wasn't nervous. Dude, I was freaking nervous. I'm out there, man, Will Clark's throwing balls, and I'm like, dude, like, between innings, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got, I'll think of his name, on the mound, iconic pitcher, and I'm throwing balls over to Will Clark, and I'm just not wanting to airmail one in the stands, right? I'm like, shit, trying to aim it.
Is this before Bonds comes over from the Pirates?
Before Bonds, yeah, okay. He came in 93. So here in first spring training game, my first major league, or professional major league game, in spring training, and we're playing the A's. And I go in for Matt Williams in the fifth inning, right? First batter is Ricky Henderson. And all I'm at third base. All I could think is, oh my, like, dude, I was just like, please don't hit the ball to me. Well, what happens, right? Not only does he hit the ball to me, but he hits it. He swings and he hits it off the end and caps it. And it's spinning funny. So I come to get it. I bobble it once. I look up and he's past the bag. Dude, I look up on the thing and they give me an error. And I was like, and the pitcher, I'll think of his name, is a lefty. He's like, hey, man, welcome up, man. You know, here, this is what it's like. I was like, error? God damn, man. Like, that's crazy, right? So then, but my high was that game, my very first at bat in a major league game, I faced a guy named Joe Baber. Long story short, he gets me to 2-1, and I crush a ball, and we're playing wherever the A's were. I think they were in Phoenix, but they had a padded wall and then a cyclone fence on top. It hits the top of the cyclone fence and kicks back into play. I get an inside the park home run.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was, and we didn't have cell phones or anything, right? No social media or nothing. And
no video of that.
No. Will Clark's like, man, you make those white boys proud, man. You can really roll, you know? And he became like my big brother. But so we get on the bus and I was just on a high. And the next day, my brother says, one of his guys that live with Eddie, he's like, dude, you see the paper? Says McGuire won, home run, Stealing won, Seitzer won, right? Will Clark won. And so that was like, if I could say, like, looking back, like from a just high standpoint, remember getting on the bus and going back to the facility. And when I got back there, right, all the other prospects, it was about 30 guys. Dude, you hit a bomb? No way, man. That was like, that was cool. That was the moment. Yeah.
There's a reason why I wanted to spend so much time there. It's not just because selfishly I love baseball. And I know most of the players that you're talking about. And you're only a couple of years older than me, so I resonate. But because you grew up without a father.
Yeah.
And then you find out that you have one on the way. In season, in your fifth, you're a couple seasons in. Tell me what transpires. You get a phone call. Are you on the off season?
So it's during the season.
Yep.
I met a gal. And we got, started seeing each other in the off season. Beautiful gal. It actually is a wonderful person. She had her challenges in life and things, but ultimately, we meet in the off season, we hook up, we start seeing each other. I go away to ball. What I didn't realize was she had a substance abuse problem. So, she ends up being, long story short, I'm playing in San Jose in the Cali. She contacts me. I completely lose touch with her for three. Yeah. I'm like, okay, why? And I was just love this gal.
20 cities a month.
Oh, I just love this gal. Right. And so I was like, man, all of a sudden she contacts me out of the blue. I'm like, how'd she even get the number? I'm living with the family, right? Like, I should ask her that actually. But I'm like, how'd she get my number? Or no, she sent a letter to the ball field. I got the letter, ended up calling her. Anyways, so she comes to see me. When I'm playing during season in 95, we get together, gets pregnant. She calls me a couple weeks later and it's like, hey, I only got tested and I'm pregnant, or a few weeks. And I was like, whoa. And, not growing up with not having a dad, I always said, man, like, listen, people that go, oh no, I was fine, man, I was you know, angry at my dad for a long time, and caused, you know, probably, you know, had a quick temper and because of it. And but I always said, man, because my dad wasn't there, man, if I have a kid one day, I'm gonna be there. So that was just innately, as soon as that happened, I'm like, well, I don't know what's gonna happen with her, but like, at that point, I knew like whatever happened, I was gonna be there. So,
which is, well, let's go deeper. So, yeah. you have a decision to make based on a past-based reference to you that has the most amount of magnitude, which is growing up without a father, making a decision at some point in your life that when, you know, you do have children, you're gonna be the best dad ever.
Yeah.
Right. And now all of a sudden, you're faced with, in order for me to be the best dad ever, that requires me to walk away from my dream. What do you do?
Yeah, man. Well, he was born April 1st, actually April Fool's Day, go figure.
One day apart.
Oh yeah, April 1st, 96. And yeah, and it was the last day of spring training. I had to play in a game. Then I went home and I held him, and he had some minor breathing issues. And I was just like, as soon as I held him, I laid down in this little bed, side bed in the hospital, and slept with him as his mom was resting. And I was just like, fell in love, man. I was like, that's it. Like, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I know I gotta be here, right? So I decided at that point that, I think the next day, that I was gonna take that year off and then just kind of figure things out and go back. And so ended up obviously never going back and just leaving, raising him his whole life. Now he's, you know, 26 and just a stud. And yeah, I coached him in all his sports and, you know, until he was 16 and thought he knew more than
you. You followed through on your promise to yourself.
Yeah.
Right, which was, you're going to be a fucking epic dad.
Yeah.
Which, bravo to you, man.
Yeah, thanks.
That alone is hard enough to just be a great parent, let alone be a great single parent, let alone to be a great single parent that only knew one path, which was, you were a fucking epic athlete,
mm-hmm.
right? And you knew, in order for me to be an epic father, it's very single father, very difficult to be an epic athlete and an epic single father. They don't even make sense mathematically, right?
Yeah.
So you step away from your dream to pursue becoming a great dad. But now in here lays the fire, because now you don't have a skill set of, you don't have a college education. You don't have a business education. You've never been in sales. You haven't, like, what's going through your head now, the moment you say, all right, the way I was trained to go make money and be a badass was through my passion in sports. You've made a decision, which is following through in the integrity of your commitment to yourself and your word of being an epic dad. What's going through your head now from a finance perspective, from a, what are you going to do next perspective? How are you going to, like, were you filled with doubt, fear? What happens next?
Man, you know what? I'll tell you, buddy. At that moment, I didn't really know. All I knew was, hey, I'm going to, you know, be there. I'm going to try to work it out with the mom, which didn't happen. But ultimately, I'm like, well, shoot, you know, I've got college in my contract, but I hated school. So I'm like, shit, I ain't gonna use that, right? Like, I don't even know why I got it.
Yeah.
So they made it sound good, right? Like, yeah, you got 4 years of college. I'm like, shit, I hated the 2 years I was there.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Like, what the hell, how did they talk me into that? So, but I ended up, you know, just start really just, I literally started working for a temp agency. I remember going home and just lifting boxes at Nike and, right, just to make a living. I think it was making like $7 an hour, $6 an hour, I don't know, something, it just crazy. So I was lifting boxes, I'd go home dirty. And that was really, you know, I didn't realize until I got older, but I saw my mom being a single mom, working two jobs, sometimes three, to raise my brother and I on our own with no help, that, man, you just, I just did what I saw, right? I'm like, okay, I gotta go to work. I gotta make money. I gotta take care of my son. And so I just was like, I gotta find something, you know? So I started there, and then about a year after I left Ball, I had a guy take me under his wing and was a mentor to me and taught me sales. And really, and that's why I'm so big on mentorship now, looking back, that I think everybody, man, the fast track is, God, if you can get a mentor that sees, it's like having a coach that sees more in you than you see in yourself, yeah, that can help pull the best out of you. And so, yeah, that just changed my life. And that was the beginning of, you know, I say, you know, decent. I think my first year made like 70 or 80. This was 96, 97.
More than my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was like, shoot, this is great. And then, you know, things started climbing. And, but I think the biggest thing, Nick, was that, you know, I had support from my mom, because when you know, there's a lot of guys that might listen to this that, I mean, dude, I saw some guys that were first round picks that were can't miss kids that missed. And man, 20, 30 years later, they're still going down a very dark road. And because you lose your identity, man.
I was going right there with you. So yeah, during that transition, that year or two before you found that mentor, because that mentor is your way up. What do you battle with going, losing your identity as a superhero athlete?
Yeah.
Right? To super dad.
It was, yeah.
But different scenario.
Dude, then. It's funny looking back. I haven't really looked back much, but looking back, it was tough, man, because you know, I didn't have any guidance. I didn't know what to do. That first year was really hard because, you know, I'm working, then I get a job working where my brother worked, and he was kind of a higher up and I was kind of a grunt guy. And, you know, and the people here, and they're like, dude, you should go back. And everyone around me was telling me, my ex-college people, and man, what do you, you know, you should go back and you don't want to miss this. And so everyone around me was telling me to go back. So that kind of made it worse, you know? So
question your decision.
Yeah, well, my mom was supportive. And she says, hey, babe, whatever you decide, I'm going to be here. I'm going to support you. But, you know, I stopped going to areas where I grew up, and I just didn't want to kind of talk or see people from college. I didn't want to see, because it was the same thing. Like, what happened? And, you know, man, what are you doing? And you should go back. And you know, I just felt, I think I kind of sheltered myself from seeing old friends or even family to an extent, because I just knew, like, man, they're gonna ask that, and then it made me
pressure, guilt.
Yeah, guilt. You feel?
Did you feel any depression during that time frame when you look back now, knowing? I'm sure we wouldn't call it then at age 20 at age 23. Looking back, do you think you went through a state of depression there? What?
I don't know. I don't know about depression, but definitely some battles, like, you know, man, how did this happen? And why did this happen? And, you know, you keep your faith and I think that was the thing that got me through, for my faith in God, but you refine that. And so, you know, looking back, yeah, man, that first year had a lot of challenging mental aspects to it that were like, just really like grueling. Yeah. And, you know, but then, you know, I go home and I'm with my son, and, you know, and then I think you get frustrated at that level. So then you get, maybe, you know, you're not as patient as you are with a 1-year-old, right? Like, it can leak, man.
For
it
sure.
It can leak into that parenthood. So, you know, I didn't have the understanding that I do now about life and joy and controlling our state and all that good stuff. So, yeah, man, it was a challenge.
So
thank God I never got into drugs. I never got into, you know, serious alcohol. I never got into anything really destructive, because, man, and I'm so thankful for that, man, because I see so many people that just literally, man, just completely
loss of identity.
Alcohol, drugs, suicide. I mean, look at all the, I mean, you look at, who's the guy for the Patriots end up, the receiver, Aaron Hernandez, right? And there's multiple stories like that that people don't hear of. Yeah. Actually, you don't hear of any of the guys unless they were a star. You don't hear about all the guys in the minor leagues that lost, that ended up taking a gun to their head, or, you know, I know multiple guys that did that, and they just, you know, they lose their, they believe, they buy into the thing that this is who I am. And it's like, no, man, that's not who you are. That's just what you do. They go, that was my gift. Dude, that was one of your gifts. You probably have 30,
yeah.
Right? So I think, like, just understanding there's a lot of support groups and things for people to come out of ball that to help them with, you know, kind of figure things out. So,
well, let's bring the story to where you come out of this. So you're at the peak of your athletic career. You make a decision based on a promise to yourself. That's what I said. This story is so unique because I haven't heard something like this. Like, you made a promise to yourself as a kid, you're gonna be a great dad because you didn't have one. Now you're faced with this decision, give up on my current dream to stay true to myself. You make the decision. Oh shit, what do I do? I don't have the skill. I don't have the skill set to go immediately start a business or create this or create that. Loss of identity, pulling back from your environment because of, you know, you don't want the guilt or the why aren't you doing this, why, or the pressure of everybody else. So that's a whole nother thing, changing environment, pulling back from your environment. And then you meet the mentor. So you meet the mentor, mentor introduces you to sales, introduces you to sales leadership, entrepreneurship, take us down that path. What happens? How do we climb out of the fire?
Man, I got into that was a big turning point, man. To where I started feeling like I was good at something again, right? Like, wow, man, this is like baseball, right? It's like, man, I'm good at this. And so I felt like with sales, I started understanding that that it was fun, it excited me, and I kind of like I had a passion for something again, you know? It gave me that like spark again. And so as I started doing that, you know, worked for Chuck Roberts was his name, owned a company called Spot Security, man. And I mentioned him on a couple shows before, but I'm so thankful to him. And because that really got me on a trajectory, you know. 2 years later, I thought I knew everything, started my own company, right? And took some clients, he sued me, we settled, whatever. Whole other story. But we were always good, and he was always
another fire, by the way. There's more than one fire out there.
Oh god.
Another fire.
Yeah. But we were always like that's part of it, right? But I think that was the and then I started my first company. And then that led me to obviously having the confidence to feel like, man, I can do this, right? I can start my own deal. And then you start another one, and then that leads to, you know, the bigger, badder stuff.
Tell us about the bigger, badder stuff, the better, bigger, badder, gooder stuff.
Yeah. So that got me into, that actually led into why I ended up selling that company. I got lucky. I ended up selling that company in the early 2000s, had a little money. I wanted to get into real estate, always loved real estate. And you know, the Carlton Sheets and the stuff we grew up on, right?
Carlton Sheets.
Yeah. I'm like, man, I was always intrigued. Whoa. And I was like, shit, man, I can't afford that. I always wanted to buy a course.
What's it about Robert L?
Robert Allen, yeah. Robert Allen was one of my first ones. Robert Allen and Robert Kiyosaki. So I go to an event, get hooked. Long story short, you know, I was learning by doing. So I go to this event, man. I come away with this big, thick book, and my ended up being, wife at the time. She's like, hey, let's go through this. Let's study it. And I said, listen, man, you know who you're talking to, right? Like, I hated school. And so I'm like, I'm jumping in and I'm going to buy some stuff. And she's like, you're crazy. And dude, by the way, this is a good learning point. When everyone tells you guys that you're crazy and you're going down a dangerous path, unless it is really dangerous, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, if someone's like, I'm going to go do cocaine and drive at 150 miles an hour at 1 a.m, I'm like, that's maybe
dangerous.
Not a good idea.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. But like buying real estate out of state, at the time, it was so unconventional, right? You're talking 2005, 2006. Nobody was doing it. I didn't know anyone doing it. And so everyone's like, oh my God, you're going to, I went on eBay. I bought 10 rooms for 50 grand.
On eBay.
I went on eBay. I'm like, I'm going to go. Cause I said, you know, I learn by doing. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I got to get in the game. And so I went on eBay. I bought 10 homes in Pennsylvania, in Ohio for $50,000 total. Fly out there, right? The first house is torn down. I call the guy, his number's disconnected. I'm like, shit, right?
Because there's not even a house there.
No house, right? And the guy, and I'm like, I knew instantly, like, this is bad, right? So basically, the ones that.
I knew instantly when I showed up to the house and there was no house, like, this was bad.
So immediately I'm like, okay, I'm either gonna like go to jail and murder someone, which I can't do, or I'm gonna just get over it and you know, put my big boy pants on and just deal with it. And so I sold them off. Long story short, I ended up sticking with it, and that year I picked up, you know, a couple dozen rentals. The next year in 06, I had a buddy that was like, hey, hook me up. I want to get some of these cheap properties. So that was the trajectory to go, okay, I've got some passive income. So the thing that I learned from the Kiyosaki event was the B quadrant,
yep,
the I quadrant, the E and the S. So I was like, wow, I don't want to be an E or an S. So now I have like, I'm basically in the I quadrant.
Yeah,
I've got some investments.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, okay, I'm in the I, and I didn't understand this except in simplicity terms. I'm in the I quadrant. Now I have the opportunity to have a B quadrant. And if I build the B quadrant, then I can have active income and passive income. So I can use the business to fund more investments, right? So that was kind of like, okay, this could be really good. So that was in 2006. And I started more or less what they call now a turnkey, where I would get our client, I'd get friends, family, and started with, I would get them the properties, make sure they were fixed, rented, managed, all of that.
Okay.
So I started doing that.
How many properties have flowed through you?
Just over 4,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, so a lot. And some of those too, probably half of those were packages that I helped companies like Aquin.
Okay.
And when the
they wanted 100 houses.
Yeah, they had, you know, a pack of 300, and I had investor connections. So I would orchestrate the deal and capture that. So part of those were packaged, but you know, just over a couple of thousand that we've sold outside of package deals to actual investors, where it's like, hey,
okay,
we'll get you the deal, we'll help make sure it's fixed, we'll rent it for you if we need to, we'll align you with a good manager. And that's kind of, yeah,
you said
still
total,
have that to this day.
Total sales revenue or I guess.
Yeah, just over $350 million.
$350 million, also known as over a quarter billion.
Yeah.
That's 350 is much bigger, just a quarter billion sounds cool.
Yeah.
Right? It's like three tenths of a billion, 4,000 units. I would say that your decision, and you'd have to sound on this, to be an amazing, epic dad and leave what was your dream at the time to pursue the unknown has paid off.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, and look, somebody, you know, at some point, those people listening right now, like, someone's got to change the freaking family curse.
Yeah.
Right? It takes somebody has to stand up. They could say, hey, I'm going to be the dad I need. I'm going to be the mom I didn't have. I'm going to create financial independence and be that one. You know, Ed Milet, who's a friend of mine, actually talked about that recently.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the one that changes.
Breaks the curse, breaks the chain.
Breaks the curse. And, you know, be it that you had an alcoholic dad. Sometimes you see, I have a cousins. One ended up going down a really tough road, and one ended up being, you know, ultra successful entrepreneurship wise. And they're both great guys. But you look at one, and I sent my cousin his picture recently, and it was two guys sitting on steps.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah, go, continue.
And yeah, and it said, one guy's in a suit, one guy's kind of a bum. And it says, when asked why I turned out the way I did, I answered because my dad was an alcoholic, right?
Yeah, one used that as a positive charge, one used as a negative charge.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think just just for me, I didn't really understand what I was doing. I didn't look at it like, I'm going to break the family curse, right? I was just like, hey, I didn't have a dad, and that was messed up, and I'm not going to be like him. I think more initially, it was like, I don't like him, and I ain't going to be like him. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not there for my kid, I'm going to be like him, and I don't want to be like him. And I think for me, it was more from kind of an anger standpoint. Like, that's not going to be me.
Which negative emotions can always fuel positive results if channeled the right way. What I think is most interesting about the outcome here is, let's say you would have pursued baseball and still could have managed being a great dad. Let's say you could have done that. What would you have then passed on skill-wise to your son? The answer is he sees his dad in a very unattainable physical capacity that maybe he can never follow in his footsteps. You as a top salesperson, you as an entrepreneur, you as a real estate mogul, you as now a tech entrepreneur, those are all transferable skills to your son. You as a baseball player are only quasi-transferable.
True.
There's physical limitations that no matter how fast I was, because I was lightning fast, it doesn't guarantee that my son is going to be as fast as me, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, your decision of what you did not only secured the time freedom or the time availability to be a great dad, but you pursued the path that you did as a businessman, which is 100% transferable.
Yeah.
Every aspect of it to your son. And you said your son's now an entrepreneur.
Oh yeah, man. He's an entrepreneur. He owns a sneaker shop. Hey, I know you've never done this live. Let's see if he, watch this. Can we FaceTime him? Can ask him a question?
Yeah, let's go.
See if he answers.
This is what editing's for. No, I'm just kidding. We've never edited, so we'll see.
Let's see. Let me see if he FaceTimes. Watch.
You never know what might happen, what we might do, who we might call.
He won't answer now.
It's because you FaceTimed him.
Dude, he always answers too. So this is a time that he won't answer, but.
Well, my bet is he'll call us back somewhere in the middle of this.
Yeah, exactly. I'll leave it over there.
But I want to just draw out that point that no matter how successful you would have been in baseball, and even if you were able to maintain the dad you wanted to be, the skills that you've, what you've shown him in the path that you've blazed is immeasurable.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, no, I mean, he's, you know, what it's done, like exactly what you said now, right? He's got a sneaker company called Holy Kicks on Instagram, KICKZ. He has, you know, selling the Jordans, Yeezys, all that. And the thing that I really love about him is not only is he figuring out his path, and he's got his own retail store and clients, but and I'm a big giver, right? And while, you know, when you're doing that many deals, listen, stuff's not going to go right sometimes. You're going to have someone that's upset. You're going to have stuff not work out right. But I've always been a giver, right? And so I see him emulating. You know, the thing that I want to let people know is that the kids are going to watch what you do, not what you say, because what you'll notice is when they're 20, 23, you're not going to see it for a while. But if you sow good seeds when they're young on what they're watching and what they're seeing, that's what's going to stick.
Yeah.
And they're going to, you know, I see him now and people come in and he's a giver. He'll give them a deal or give, he does giveaways for people where give stuff for free to people that can't afford it.
Yeah.
And things like that, you know, and I think that, you know, like it's cool. Like the coolest thing, like Melissa has met him. He was here for my 50th last year and everyone was like, dude, your son is the freaking coolest kid, man. Like great, you know, and I think for me, like I get
it's
that.
It's crazy to hear you call him a kid because I still feel like I'm 26, even though I'm not 26.
but I get that all the time, yeah. Right? And I even got it the other day from a guy. It's like, dude, I went in to your son's store and I met him and oh my God, man. They're like, dude, he was so kind and just helping me and so positive and man, you did a great job. And I think now, you know, sometimes when you're in the fire and you're forged through it, you don't really know you can't really think that far ahead. But I think if people can just understand that, man, if you just stay the path, if you just keep going down the road you need to go, that you know in your heart is right. I think that's the biggest thing. We all know in our heart what's right.
Yep.
And I think if we know that, you know, we try to get in our head and talk ourselves out of it or whatever, but if you know that, hey, this is right, this is the right thing to do, and I don't know how it's going to work out, but, and you know, that's all I did. And so now I look back and I go, shoot, man, you know, he's emulating the entrepreneurship, the sales skills, which I think teaching kids, you know, sales and connecting to people is the number one thing they can learn above anything. And so, but now he's learned those things, whereas exactly like you said, had I went down that road a ball, who knows what would have happened.
Yep. And so, no matter how good of a dad you would have been. So I'm going to land the plane here, and I'm going to end it actually different than we originally talked about it, because I believe there's a lot of former athletes, both male and female, that are watching this right now. And maybe, who knows, maybe pieces of this make it out to current athletes that are in college or young 20s or maybe even teenagers that are athletes that think there's only one way. I got to be pro athlete, I got to be pro athlete. How much of who you are today as a successful businessman, as a successful investor and entrepreneur, is a byproduct of the discipline and the habits you created as an athlete?
Man, I think, I think two things. And I'm raw, I'm honest, man.
Yeah.
And people go, oh yeah, man, did you show up to the field first and leave last? I said, no, I was just super good. I was blessed. I was like the one in a million. I was like massively good. I mean, I was in our draft, right? I was the youngest guy in the draft in our league. I was rated as our number one power hitter in the whole organization, right? So at 19, and I'm like, dang. So I was just gifted.
Yeah.
But what I did was a lot of the things that threw ball that I didn't know that I needed to do. I never really learned how to get over, and until the end where I left, right before I left, I finally figured out, I'm like, shit. But how to let a bat at bat stay a bat at bat. Right. So now what I do, Nick, is I take a lot of the things that I didn't implement in ball, you know, instead people would want to hear.
Sure.
Like what I did was I took the things that I didn't understand then that I do now, like how to leave a bat, a bat, a bat, a bat. Okay. How to leave a bad call, a bad call. How to leave a bad moment, a bad moment. And actually
emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And actually be okay. And just move past it and not let it, you know, ruin your day. And I think if people can realize, you know, like the happiness factor, we talked about it, vibing, you know, starting your day in a happy state control. I think if more people can understand that, I ended with it out there was people think that, and I thought this when I was young playing ball, what happens dictate how it feels. I struck out, shit, right? Smash a bat, throw the helmet, right? So
hit the side of the wall.
But basically, we're wired, you know, the thing that I want people to understand is we're wired from an early age to basically, like, think about it. I fell down, what does my mom do? Here's a sucker.
Yeah.
So we're wired from an early age that external things make us dictate our feelings.
Yeah.
And so it's not our fault. And as I got to understand them, like, wow. But then I in my growth walk through Tony Robbins, Joe Dispenza, and a lot of guys that I've grown with, it's like how we feel actually dictates what happens to us. It dictates how we view things. It dictates our perception. It dictates, you know, just so much of our environment. So it's actually the reverse. Instead of like what happens to me dictates how I feel, it's actually how we feel dictates what happens to us. And I think that if people can just understand that, start practicing that more and really practice it, and you know, they'll see that the fruits come from that and be like, whoa, man, like that's incredible, you know? So I think that'll help a lot of people.
Beautiful closing thoughts. Where you go, what you get, who you become, your outcomes start with how you feel. how you feel dictates the rest, as opposed to the rest dictating how you feel.
Yeah.
Because I know how I feel right now about the construction that's going on above us.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let that dictate my outcome.
I heard it. I could...
And I wanted to address that for anyone that hears the noise in the background. So first of all, I want to say thank you for sharing a story that's super personal, and talking about, you know, being just a kick-ass dad. Also for all of us athletes out there, taking us down a cool journey of your path, but associating back to probably childhood athletes that we can all connect to, and which makes it super fun for me. So I appreciate you for that.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you guys that are watching this, my foundation, Next Gen, we teach, and you actually referenced this, we teach youth entrepreneurship, high school level, college level, business plan contests, grants, you name it. So if you're at all moved by anything that you're hearing through Forged by Fire, and you want to support a great organization, go to thenextgen.org, check out the organization, make a donation. That money goes to educate youth entrepreneurship all throughout the country and eventually the world as we build out an LMS. I want to say thank you. Big thank you to DJ, drove all the way down here today, spoke to the group online, spoke to the group in person, now doing the podcast. And episode 7, it's a wrap. See you next week. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thank you.